Everything is bad. Everything is terrible. Life is suffering. Eat at Arby's. Hey, everyone. Welcome into Scrambled Eggs, your unofficial Marquette basketball therapy session here on Crack Sidewalks. Phil, Saturday did not go well.
No, that was that turned out less than ideal. It turns out you should not commit two fouls in the first 45 seconds of a game.
Yeah, in today's show, we are going to mull over what exactly happened against Georgia. How bad is that loss? Is it just one loss, or is it a sign of bigger problems to come? How optimistic or pessimistic should we be about the coming games, Vermont, and, of course, the Red Menace, the hated Badgers, coming up on Saturday? Phil, let's just start with, man, that Georgia loss, it was a bummer, man. For me, from my perspective, that's a quality team coming into your house, and if you want to be one of the big boys and you want to be a tournament team, you need to win that game. I don't care what the excuses are. Marquette did not win it, and yeah, I know there were foul situations and whatever excuses you want to throw at it. The bottom line, Marquette did not win a game. It was supposed to, a game it really should have won if they want to be considered a tournament team and build anything that is considered to be a tournament resume. What was your takeaway watching the loss to the Georgia Bulldogs?
Well, I think you're spot on with that, that basically if Marquette does not make the tournament this season, you can look back at that game in particular and say, well, right there is a game that they, A, should have won, and B, is probably a reason why they do not go on to win. I will say, I think, you know, if Marquette and Georgia play, you know, 10 times, I think Marquette wins 7 out of those 10 times, but they don't play 10 times, and it doesn't matter. Only the one result counts. So I think Marquette was generally would have been the better team, but they were not on Saturday, and that's probably the most disappointing part of that game, was that the team did not play up to its potential. And there are no excuses. It just, there were, especially certain players just did not play well in it, and it reflected on how that game turned out.
Yes, certain players indeed, and there was one who particularly stood out, basically based on the starting lineup and some comments in the postgame, and I don't think we even need to dance around it. Let's kind of jump into it. Does Marquette have an Andrew Rousey problem?
I think Andrew Rousey has an Andrew Rousey problem. I mean, he committed 6 out of 12 of Marquette's turnovers, was 0 for 7 to start the game, was benched and was noticeably, I'm not a big body language guy, but was noticeably agitated before the game started during introductions. It's a problem. We have, without Rousey playing at a high level, we have one point guard, and that one point guard got two fouls in the first 45 seconds and played a grand total of 20 minutes. You're not going to win no matter what with that kind of production, where with one point guard in trouble and the other one apparently sulking. It just wasn't good.
Yeah, Wojo took Rousey out of the starting lineup, and based on some post-game comments, I forget the exact phrasing, but it was something to the effect of, Phil, like, you know, some of our senior leaders need to step up and effort and you play the way you practice. He definitely threw that out there. And our effort and practice needs to be better. And that was obviously something directed at Rousey. And Wojo obviously tried to send a message to Rousey and fire him up and see how he would react to a benching, and the answer was not well.
Yeah, it did. Like, it did not go well at all.
Not well at all. And the thing is, if Howard hadn't gotten those two quick fouls, he probably would have sat for much longer, and so I guess he didn't even feel the effect of being benched that much, because he only felt it for 45 seconds of game time. Then he ended up playing more minutes than anyone in the game except for Hauser.
Right.
And then he goes out, and again, he had, what, 6 turnovers was the number, and shot 4-15 from the field, 3 of 9 from 3, which is below average for him for sure. And he is the only senior on this team, Phil, and he's, I guess, the oldest player on the team by 2 years. I haven't looked at everyone's age in front of me. And he is a guy, whether he likes it or not, is a guy that the rest of the team is going to look up to and probably mimic his body language and say, well, that's the way the senior leader does it. That's the way we should do it. And Wojo was probably trying to send a message to Rousey, is like, you need to rally this team. You need to lead this team. You are the point guard. You are the senior leader. And he did not respond well to it at all. And I don't, Wojo's probably trying to coach this out of him. I don't know if he can. Maybe the message hopefully will be sent over the weekend, Phil, before they take on Vermont later this week. But I have a little bit of a concern. Hopefully this is just a blip on the radar, and maybe when we get to February or March, we will forget this even happened. But for right now, it is troubling for a team that is struggling to really kick it into another gear. You know, they have some okay wins, you know, VCU and LSU, that's fine. Everything else is a game they were absolutely supposed to win, and they really don't have anything to hang their hat on in their non-conference resume right now. So you're looking, and you have really only two more chances to get a decent non-conference win. And if Rousey's attitude does not change and the performance of the team behind it, you know, Marquette could be heading towards Christmas break with a pretty empty non-conference resume.
Yeah, well, and don't forget he had the weird expanding, not expanding suspension at the beginning of the year where he sat for the exhibition but not for the charity event.
Yeah, we don't know what that was, but I mean, I'm assuming it's something similar of effort and practice, or you know, showing up on time or something like that. But yeah, go on.
But I mean, we haven't seen this out of Rousey previously. Like, he hasn't been known as a troublemaker. Do you think this is a recent development? Do you think this is, you know, do you think it's an effort attitude problem, or is there something larger here? Has Wojo kind of lost Rousey here a little bit, or has he gotten a little too big for his britches? He had a great Maui Invitational, but since then, it's like the wheels have fallen off.
Maybe it's a situation where he sees himself as the senior leader now, whereas in the past he would probably have deferred to Dwayne Wilson more often than not when it comes to who's the spokesman on this team, who's the guy who speaks for everyone else. Where, you know, last year was Dwayne Wilson, maybe even Caden Reinhardt, who would have been the oldest guy on the team. You know, now he's the oldest guy on the team. He is the only senior, and he looks at himself as the most experienced, and maybe his ego kicked up a notch. I guess maybe I'm not phrasing that right, but you know, he's getting a little too confident, a little more confident than he needs to be, and he's maybe his usage rate is way too high. He takes way too many shots, and you know, my big issue with Rousey is, you know, the thing is, you need him to shoot well. It's not like I don't want him on this team. You need him to shoot well if you're going to win games. If you're Marquette, but his decision-making has been troubling, and I think he's a little bit, and I hesitate to use this word, but I think Wojo's comments make it fair to say, maybe a little bit of a selfish player. He's a little bit of a me-first guy. I don't think he makes other people better. He doesn't play great defense, which is something you would say about selfish players. He's not particularly a great creator for anyone else. He definitely, he loves to shoot. We know he loves to do that. But the thing is, you want him shooting more often than not, because when he's shooting, you know, better than 40%, that's what Marquette needs if they're going to win games. It's not like you don't want him shooting.
Right.
But when he tries to create too much on his own without looking to one of his teammates, especially when he's not looking to Howard or looking to Hauser, I think he's really hurting his team. Like, way too often, I think he drives the lane with no plan at all. And once he gets down there, he either turns it over or gets a shot blocked and turns into a real mess. So Wojo does need to reel Rousey in a little bit. And I don't know. The thing is, Rousey's a senior, he may be set in his ways. I don't know how much you can change the way he plays, but something does need to change a little bit, because I think we're getting a little too much Rousey right now. And it's, again, it's not like I don't want him playing or don't want him shooting, but I just want it spaced out just a little bit more, because there are other guys on this team who can contribute, especially Howard and Hauser, and they're just not getting a chance to when Rousey's playing a little too much hero ball.
Well, I guess I'll take a slightly different tack, and I'll disagree a little bit on the selfishness thing, and that very well may be the root cause. But I get the impression that he thinks he can do more or should do more than he probably should. I don't think it's about a stat padding. I think it's actually a little bit similar to what Caton did last year, where Caton goes hero ball, not necessarily because Caton thinks, you know, or Rousey think that they're the bee's knees, right? But more so just because they're like, well, I got to go do this, And it just, but I don't know. It could be attitude as well, simply because some of the turnovers that Rousey had were just sloppy play, dribbling the ball off of somebody's foot, not you know, lack of attention to detail. And quite frankly, there is not one single good thing that can happen from him going inside the three-point arc or anywhere near the lane, quite frankly. It was just, there was at least three times he drove into the lane and it was either a turnover or a block shot, or, you know, it resulted in Georgia getting the ball and no points for Marquette, and that just can't continue.
Yeah, a stat that I've kind of made up, you know, I just had a gut feeling watching the team this year. Anytime Rousey gets close to the bucket, like not so much a paint touch, but closer than that, like maybe within 8 feet, you know, around 5 feet, it seems like more often than not, it's a negative result for Marquette. So when I watched the game, I had to watch it late because I wasn't able to watch it live. So no, I knew the result. I knew Marquette lost. So I decided to kind of haphazardly track it as I was going through this game. And just a rough estimate by me, Rousey in the Georgia game, he got into the paint 11 times in that game, resulted in 2 turnovers, 1 of 6 field goals. That one make was a goaltend. He didn't actually make one, but he did get that one layup was a goaltend, so he did get one.
And I wasn't totally convinced watching it live that that ball was going to get there when they goaltended either.
Yeah, he didn't have any assists, and the team missed 2 field goals, and the team had 1 turnover on his drives to the paint. And I just feel like you alluded to it there, Phil. I think when he drives the lane, and he's a little guy trying to make a play in there, a lot of times it is a turnover or a block shot. And I just, you know, more athletic point guards, bigger point guards, you love to see them attack the basket and get, you know, get buckets.
Howard's a perfect example, right?
Yeah, and he's been doing that pretty well. Yeah, he does. And he has that little floater that is very beneficial when you're not a very big guard and you need to get it over a 7-footer. And Rousey has used the floater a little bit this year, but not that much. I'd like to see him use it more, as much as Howard does, because I think Howard uses it very well. Like his 2-point field goal percentage is very high for a guy as small as he is. Howard's 2-point field goal percentage is 70% right now.
That's really good. That's better than Fisher had last year.
I mean, that's a percentage you would expect from a big man. But like I said, Howard's shot selection in the 2-point area is excellent. I don't think he forces many shots. I don't think he tries to shoot it over the taller players too much and like try to do an up and under when there's really no chance of it happening. Maybe he gets a shot blocked here and there, but it's never a terrible shot with him. Rousey, by contrast, is shooting 49% on 2-point baskets. And I, like I said, without looking at a stat, I feel like a lot of those are blocks.
Jump balls
jump out, turnovers, kicks, it's just not his strength. And so, Rousey is at the best when he's shooting threes. And, I don't want him – I know it's probably a bad thing to think he needs to be that one-dimensional and just shoot threes all day, but when there are nothing but negative results when he's getting in kind of that restricted area where, the opponent's big men normally are, you have to adjust your game a little bit. Like I said, use that floater a little more often like Howard does, or just try to make – just. You got to make better decisions down there, and I think that's what Wojo wants out of his senior leader. I think that's why he more or less called him out yesterday. I mean, is that fair to say that he?
Yeah, oh, absolutely. He 100% called him out.
Yeah, and so I like I said, maybe saying selfish is a poor way to phrase it, but to say he's disappointed Wojo a little bit, I don't think is unfair to say at all. So. And again, I don't mean to say like Rousey is the only reason Marquette lost yesterday, or against Georgia on Saturday, but his performance was a problem, and that's not necessarily the first time he's played like that. Certainly not this year. When the team's not shooting well, they're going to have a hard time beating just about anybody. And the team as a whole did not shoot well, but Rousey's performance was certainly a problem. I don't know what else you really want. Or what you can fix with Rousey, but Wojo, I think, is trying to get him, one, maybe adjust his attitude a little bit, and again, he has to make better decisions, because these next 2 games are going to be so tough. Vermont is actually on par with Georgia as far as KenPom, so that game is not a lock, folks. If you're just seeing the name Vermont and thinking, well, that's a win, you're going to be caught by surprise in this next game.
Their only loss is to Kentucky at Kentucky.
Right. And that was a close one, too. And they probably had Kentucky. So I'm nervous about that Vermont game. We'll probably break it down a little bit more here in just a minute, Phil. But, you know, not to – maybe we've piled on Rousey enough, Phil. Is there anything else that jumped out at you about what went wrong against Georgia other than some an off game from Rousey?
I feel bad piling on him a little bit, but man, Matt Helt, if our point guards are going to struggle, and we'll get to the positives. There was two positives I really want to call out when we get to it, that around the Georgia game that kept us in that, but Matt Helt as the center, and as you know, this is now his third year in the program, he has got to find a way to contribute as more than just a screen setter and an occasional rebounder. There were three or four times, even once or twice when Rousey got into the restricted area, where he just wasn't ready for passes and didn't go up strong and was playing very timid. And I think that was, you know, he didn't have a foul until 4 minutes left in the game. And to me, if you're a starting five and you don't have a foul until 4 minutes left in the game, you're not playing hard enough or aggressive enough.
Coming into the game, the small sample size award went to Matt Helt with the nation's second best off O rating on KenPom.
Statistics aren't all they're cracked up to be.
No, they're not. You know, again, it was a small usage rate, but he was very efficient. And the thing is, it's still not bad for what it's worth. Again, his usage rate is very small, but his O rating would rank like 24th, like top 25 in the country. But I think that, again, he kind of picks his spots, and when he does take a shot, normally it goes well. But it certainly did not against Georgia. You're right. His he got exposed a little bit, and honestly, again, I hate piling on these guys because we are talking about kids here, guys between, you know, 18 and 23 years old, I guess, with Rousey's case. But, Helt had a bad game, and he's had some really tough games against, like, Purdue was just a nightmare for him. But, you know, that Purdue's a nightmare for just about everybody. But, yeah, he had a tough time. He did not make a field goal. He had seven boards, which is fine. He had one block in the game. But, you would like to see a little bit more out of him. I guess the one positive light there is Froehling is coming soon. So, you know, he's going to be able to help out there in the post and maybe take a little pressure off Matt, and he won't feel like he has to do as much maybe, and maybe he can be a little more aggressive defensively, knowing, you know, he has a couple extra fouls to work with because Froehling's behind him to pick him up. And who knows, Froehling may even play more than Helt going forward. We'll see kind of how those minutes shake out starting next week. But, yeah.
Well, yeah, Helt did get, I'm sure he probably got worn down as well because Theo John, again, struggled with fouls, so Helt, when, you know, I think Theo got maybe 10 minutes out in the game, and then Helt played nearly 30, which is tough for a big man. I get that. And then especially as much pick and roll defense as we have to play, it gets tiring. But yeah, we have to get contributions, especially if the shots aren't falling. We have to get contributions from every position on the floor. And unfortunately there was little to no contribution from the center position in the game against Georgia.
Yeah. So that's why we lost. Normally we say it's the defense why we lose, but
of the positives we should talk about.
Yeah, the defense, I wouldn't say it was awful.
No,
against Georgia.
Held Matten to 13 points. If you had told me that Matten would be held to 13 points and Georgia would be held to 71 or 72 points, whatever, 73 points, I would have been convinced Marquette would have won.
Yeah, you know, Georgia, again, not a good three-point shooting team. That held up. They only shot 28%. They shot 48% for the game. Yante Maiden, their star big man, he only had 13 points. Now, when he did get the ball, he shot the ball, so he was, you know, 5 of 8 from the floor. But, again, they kind of limited his touches and didn't really let him get going. I thought he would really eat Matt Helt alive, and he really didn't.
Well, and Sam Hauser was actually guarding him. So Sam proved he could guard a pretty strong four.
Yeah, and he may need to do more of that going forward. But, yes, the defense was not awful. It wasn't the reason Marquette lost. I'll say that. It wasn't because they couldn't get a stop. It was that Marquette couldn't make a shot. We've piled on Rousey a lot in the show, but the team as a whole shot 35%. Sam Hauser was just 3-10 from the floor, 2-7 from three. And again, you didn't really get much from Matt Helt or Theo John offensively, so you got really nothing in the paint. The other guys really didn't take many shots. Sakar Anim only took one shot. Jamal Cain, not bad. I mean, Jamal Cain was 3-4.
That is one of the other positives. Is the young freshman Theo John is still struggling. I think he'll get there. I think he's struggling, as most typical freshman big men do. So I kind of grade on a curve there. But I think Greg Elliott and Jamal Cain, this is one of those good news, bad news, is they're, with Hanif Cheatham leading, they're getting a lot more minutes, which, bad news is not all of those are going to be productive because they're so inexperienced. But those two guys are, I think they're going to really turn out to be some good players, especially Elliott. He had a couple of defensive stops. He had one block on the defensive end that it was too good of a block because he basically blocked it right back to the guy who then tried to shoot, passed it out, and Georgia ended up scoring out of the possession. But we're getting good, productive, useful minutes out of those guys. Which is great, but the team's got to have production out of all five positions on a consistent basis, and we just didn't have that on Saturday.
Yeah, they're definitely going to need that. One thing I did want to touch on with Rousey before we move on and start talking about the next games. The thing is cool. The thing is fun. But sometimes I wonder if the book is out on the thing. And I think sometimes maybe Rousey may be trying to get those free throws too much. And thing is, not only do other teams know it, I think officials know it too. And they may not always give him the benefit of the doubt when he's leaning into a player. And I think other coaches are on that too. Say, look, he's going to try to get our guy in the air and lean into him and get three free throws. Don't fall for it. Again, the thing is a fun hashtag and all, but I do wonder if the book is out and less teams are falling for it and it's not quite as effective as it used to be. All I'm saying is sometimes I wish Rousey would not try to get that foul and just shoot the ball because he's still a great three-point shooter.
I think he does. You may be right that at some point it will become kind of a crutch for him. But, it worked multiple times on Saturday, including one time where he shot faked. The guy jumped up. He then shot faked like he was going to jump into the guy and then shot faked again, got the guy up and legitimately he went straight up and the guy made contact. So he got the three fouls. So, it's still there. To your point, I would be concerned on an over-reliance for that because I think officials are going to become, quite frankly, if the defender goes straight up and down and Rousey jumps into him, it's a foul on Rousey. It's not the thing. And officials are going to start calling that tighter if it gets too out of hand.
Yeah, look, the shot fake is a great weapon. Don't stop using the shot fake. I guess I'm just saying is your first instinct shouldn't be to lean in every single time. If the guy goes straight up, step aside and get a wide open three, next to him, while the guy's jumping out of the way. I guess that's just my thought. I love it when it happens, especially when he does that thing when he throws it up left-handed and it goes in. That's just hilarious. But there were a couple times yesterday where I thought he was trying too hard to get a free throw out of it and just threw up a bad shot.
Yeah, I agree with you.
Shot selection and 3-point. And again, hopefully this is just a blip on the radar and this podcast does not age well. And he maybe can snap out of this funk he's in and he can have two good games this week and we can just forget this whole Georgia thing happened. But it did happen, and now that brings up the upcoming schedule, which could be a concern. Because, again, Vermont is a team that is on par with Georgia as far as KenPom rankings. They actually have two losses now. They actually lost to Bucknell on Saturday. So maybe they were caught looking ahead to Marquette. But that still does not change the fact that Vermont is a team that could absolutely beat Marquette, especially if the Marquette's offensive game is not up to par as it was on Saturday against Georgia. Vermont has size. They have guys who can shoot the ball. Their defense really is, I guess, you know, their overall defensive ranking is pretty good. Their adjusted defensive efficiency is in the top 100. It's actually ranked 87th as we're recording this. They're a great offensive rebounding great offensive rebounding team as far as limiting their opponent's offensive rebound. So I guess that means they're a good defensive rebounding team is what I'm trying to say. Opponents have been shooting pretty well against them.
Yeah, so I guess I'm trying to figure out the statistics on this, how they can be a top 100 KenPom team but be generally pretty bad at defending the three and the two. It's great that they're a top five defensive rebounding team in the country, but so they get every rebound that doesn't go in. But if a lot of shots go in, it's not great defense. I'm a little confused by the
I'm just kind of looking at it because I see, you know, if you're familiar with KenPom, bad stats are red, good stats are green, great stats are like really dark green, and really bad stats are dark red. And I'm looking at Vermont's numbers, I see a lot of red. The only number that really jumps out is that number on offensive rebound percentage for the defense, which means defensive rebounding for them. So I guess they do grab a lot of rebounds.
And they defend free throws really well, apparently.
That must be key. They must have a great student section that really distracts opponents. So that's one of my favorite stats on KenPom is like, well, you are great at defending free throws. But, so Phil, when you're looking at maybe at this Vermont team and kind of the numbers they bring into this thing, where do you see an advantage for Marquette?
Well, I think the advantage for Marquette is that it's offense against defense, right? Marquette's offense against Vermont's defense, statistically and by all accounts, you know, just what I've seen in the maybe 5 minutes total I saw Vermont play against Kentucky. I think Marquette's offense can do stuff against Vermont. They are longer, like Georgia, so who knows? Maybe that'll throw off Marquette's shooting again, which would be very bad. But I think Marquette can get their points. It's going to be a question of whether or not Marquette can get the stops again on defense. It's interesting. Vermont is a very good defensive rebounding team, but they're an atrocious offensive rebounding team. So
in the 300s.
Yeah, so you know, there's enough here that I want to say Marquette should win this game, but it really just depends on how they respond to kind of what was a giveaway on Saturday against Georgia. Or do they come out mentally sharp? Is Andrew Rousey done with whatever it was that was going on and it ready to contribute in a way that's going to promote the team's general success?
Yeah, and, you know, if Marcus Howard was to keep banging threes like he did against Chicago State, that would be great. That's one thing we kind of glossed over here. It's kind of been the forgotten story is him setting a new program record with 11 three-pointers against Chicago State. If we could have more performances like that, that would be terrific. But, you know, I agree with you. It's almost kind of what I went back to when we were breaking down the VCU game, Phil.
Right.
You know, Marquette should have better players.
I mean, right.
They just should. And I know Vermont is a tough team. They've shown it so far this year. The talent level should be on Marquette's side. And, you know, Marquette is more or less, when you look at all of the numbers as they match up on KenPom, Marquette's a little bit better in just about every spot, except obviously Marquette's two-point percentage defense is still quite bad. You know, they're off to such a bad start, they got a long way to go. Kind of dig themselves out of that hole to have anything that's even close to respectable. But, you know, I guess, you know, Marquette's 2-point percentage defense is bad. Vermont's 2-point percentage offense is top 100 in the country. So I would be concerned a lot of easy buckets for Vermont in this game. So if that's going to happen, Marquette's 3-pointers got to be falling. Marquette's still 3-point shooting. While, you know, coming into the season, I would hope it would be like in the top 10 in the country, like way up there. For now, it's a little bit lower than you would think. It's 84th in the country. I still think, certainly feel they have the talent and they have the ability to be one of the top 10 three-point shooting teams in the country. And Vermont's three-point percentage defense, not great. Again, that's another one of those red numbers if you're looking at KenPom. They're in the 200s. So the shots should be there. So they should have some open looks against Vermont on Tuesday. So hopefully they can get some shots to fall and they can get this one get this one in the bag. The thing is, this probably isn't something you would have said before the season, but depending on how the next couple games go, Vermont may end up being Marquette's best non-conference win.
Yeah, that's...
because they have a better KenPom ranking than LSU or VCU. You lost the Georgia game, so you're not getting that one. And who knows what's going to happen to Madison. We'll get to that one in a little bit. And who knows the way Madison is trending. Vermont may finish higher than them anyway, but even if you can steal that game. But we'll get to that in a minute. But this one is an important one, Phil, because if you lose this one, you're in danger of coming in with a real stinker of a non-conference resume. Because I know we were all excited when Marquette went to Maui. They beat VCU, so they got the strength of schedule boost by playing Wichita State and then playing LSU and going to the winner side of the bracket. But the problem is, if you have a good non-conference schedule but you don't beat anyone, then what's the point if you don't have any quality wins to show for it? So this Vermont win is important because, again, if they get it, it might end up being their best non-conference victory. So you got to have something to bring to the non-conference resume, to bring to the table if you're talking about Selection Sunday, if you still want to be a tournament team. Or who knows, Marquette may be fighting to be an NIT team, and that's still something we may have to accept later on. But if you're talking about having any kind of decent resume, this must win is maybe a bit cliche, but it's a very important game for Marquette to get before people would really kind of start souring on the direction of the team for this year. Because if you lose this one, I don't know how many good wins they're going to get in the season as a whole.
Yeah, well, and not only that, is just looking at the general trend in terms of, so Marquette can beat, teams that are not in the top 75 KenPom, but, Vermont, Georgia, Wichita State, Purdue, all those losses, should they lose to Vermont, would mean that Marquette just hasn't been able to show it can beat a top 75 team. And guess what? There's a lot of those top 75 teams in the Big East. So not just from
basically,
basically
everybody but DePaul and Georgetown.
Right. And even Georgetown with undefeated, Patrick Ewing, savior, granted they haven't played anyone in the top 200, but be that as may, Georgetown's even now is close to, they're 78. So they're close to top 75. But
congrats to Coach Ewing on that big win over Coppin State, following up a really tough one against Maine and Richmond after that. Good for Georgetown.
Winner's going to win, Joe. Winner's going to win.
I just want them to beat Syracuse. That's all I want them to do.
Yeah, well, we can ask for small miracles all the time. So a loss to Vermont, not only does it essentially eliminate anything of value on the non-conference schedule, I think even depending on how Wisconsin seasons go, I mean, there's some smoke on the Greg Gard bandwagon. So even if Marquette were to beat Wisconsin, who knows if that win holds up long-term throughout the season. So you really got to – this Vermont, I do think it is a non-conference must win. It may not matter if they go on a tear and win 12 games in the Big East.
Not matter if they go on the opposite way and only win 6 games in the Big East.
Correct. But for the purposes of winning the non-conference, this is a must win. They have to put on a good performance for against Vermont. I mean, because let's be honest, outside of probably the first half and part of the second half against VCU and maybe the first 12 minutes against LSU, we haven't seen really good basketball, and Wichita State, maybe the first half of Wichita State, but we haven't seen really good basketball out of Marquette, right? I mean, Eastern Illinois, they went into overtime. Chicago State, even, especially in the first half, until, everyone went nuts from behind the three-point line in the second half, even the Chicago State game felt a little bit close. So we haven't seen a good performance out of Marquette, really, this season. So at some point, we need to see one of
those. You definitely haven't seen a complete performance. You've seen
complete
some good
game.
Offensive
yes.
showings. You definitely are, and I think that's the thing that's probably the most frustrating for Wojo, is to play a complete game. Again, I'm never going to expect a great defensive performance where you're going to hold a team to, 30% shooting or something. But to have a game where you are at least adequate defensively, and then you also shoot the lights out, haven't seen that yet. It's probably coming sooner, hopefully sooner rather than later. Saturday would be great, but I would love to see just a complete, and I think Marquette's basketball is ahead of them. I just hope they don't have a bad week here and lose two to Vermont and Wisconsin, and then the wheels fall off, and then if there are attitude problems within the program, then that becomes toxic, and you wonder if you even get back on your feet, and all of a sudden you look up and you're below 500, right?
Right.
And so, again, I that's probably a very pessimistic view of it, but that is kind of my worst-case scenario for Marquette is you lose two games this week, the attitude problem or problems in the program get worse, and you know then you beat Northern Illinois and American, but then you go into Big East play, and then the problems aren't fixed, and then you really start to struggle. But you know there is, you know, we've kind of been through this many times. We've been doing this podcast for 5 years now, Phil. We've been through it many times where we have recorded a very down in the dumps, pessimistic end of the world podcast, and then two wins later, everything's wonderful again. So, you know, like, how great would you feel about two wins if Marquette hypothetically won two games this week?
I would feel great. I would feel like we got what we needed out of the non, again, assuming they beat Northern Illinois and American.
Right.
You know, so if they win the next four, let's say, if we're assuming the next two get one, they accomplished what they needed to accomplish in the non-conference play.
I mean, exactly. Again, we're all a little pessimistic down in the dumps because we're afraid the defense is never going to go anywhere, and there are some red flags around, maybe some attitude and practice habits in the program. But you fix everything with two wins this week. Winning cures absolutely everything. So hopefully you get that win against Vermont, and now let's not necessarily looking past Vermont, but moving on to the next one, Phil. And this is a Badger Hate Week podcast. We haven't done much hating yet.
It's hard to hate when you're a little nervous about your team.
Yeah, when you're not feeling so great about yourself. But big congrats to everyone at the Ohio State University on a wonderful weekend they had. I'm quite jealous.
They're fine, upstanding individuals, and everyone at their university should be congratulated as great human beings.
And you know, maybe if I ran into an Ohio State fan at the Cotton Bowl in Dallas in a few weeks, maybe I'll buy them a beer, but not all of them because there are lots of them.
And most of them are jerks.
Not an untrue statement. But, you know, with the thing with this Wisconsin game, Phil, I think both, I wouldn't say hot seat is the right word, but I think there are a lot of anxious fans on both sides as with regards to their coaches heading into this showdown with Wisconsin and Marquette. You know, on the Wisconsin side, they've got, as we're recording this on Sunday, 5 losses. And it may be more by the time they play Marquette on Saturday. Wisconsin actually has 2 games before they play Marquette. They have a Big Ten game because, you know, Big Ten is starting their conference play early.
What a joke that is. They are just idiots. I'm sorry.
Because we have to play in Madison Square Garden, and there is literally no other place to play a conference tournament but Madison Square Garden. So we're going to start conference play in November or first week of December. So good for you, Big Ten. You do you.
Because nobody says, nothing says New York basketball like Big Ten.
Yeah. I know the Minnesota and Wisconsin fans just can't wait to be in Madison Square Garden. But so they got Penn State on Monday, another Big Ten game, which KenPom has them as an underdog. Yeah, they got 2 road games. They're going to be in the state of Pennsylvania this week. They got Penn State, then they got Temple, and then they're coming home to play Marquette. So hopefully, there's a catch-22 there. I'd love to see Wisconsin limping into this thing at 3-7. But on the flip side, you really don't want to lose to them because then that is a real stinker of a loss. So the other side, it'd be nice if they won 2 games and then you could beat them, and then that would actually be a decent win. But I know you live in a half-Badger household, Phil. So you kind of have your finger on the pulse of the program. What is going on with the Wisconsin Badgers right now?
Quite frankly, they got a lot of youth. And you know what? Greg Gard may not be the answer. It turns out when the old Grinch decided to call it quits and essentially threw a temper tantrum to get his guy in as his successor, he may not have been the answer. He, if you can believe it, is more milquetoast than Paul Christ. The Badger,
really?
the Badger football coach. So, and quite frankly, now that the Big Ten football season is essentially over, now fans will actually start paying attention to the program. So, I think they'll get a lot more attention for the fact that they have a losing record through their first eight games, and they have not looked good pretty much at all. I think it's just a lot of youth. A lot of, you know, they basically got Ethan Happ, who, if Marquette doesn't double him instantly every time, Wojo should be fired. there is nobody on Wisconsin's team so far that has proven that they can help Happ out when Happ gets doubled. There should not be any fear of 3-point shots. I mean, you got to guard it, obviously, but you can rotate on them. You can double the post. Happ's going to struggle to get it out of the post. The program just seems a little bit listless. I'm not gonna lie. I think there's a talent problem there too.
So basically, what you're saying is once Bo's pro players that he coached up and made to borderline NBA prospects all left, the program isn't as good, is what you're saying?
Yeah, it turns out Bo Ryan was a pretty decent coach, a terrible human being, but a decent coach, and that was a little bit of Badger hate. And
he wasn't a terrible human being. He was just a terrible vampire, but go on.
Correct. He is the undead. But yeah, they're just, I mean, there's Kobe King will probably turn out to be a good player, but the rest of the players on the roster, I just don't see any talent. And that rock fight that they got into with Virginia was, woof, man, that was bad. And Wisconsin had looks and just couldn't hit them, and just seemed un-Wisconsin-like.
Yeah, and I think you bring up a good point about look. Ethan Happ is going to be the key to the entire game. It would be delightful if he could get two early fouls and get out of the game, and then I think Marquette would have a nice chance to go to Madison and get a win. But, you know, he is going to get his against Marquette's interior defense, which has certainly proven to be not good this year. But the thing is, you know, you can use your fouls against Happ because he's still not a great free throw shooter. What's he shooting?
But Joe, line? There was an Instagram post about how Ethan Happ can shoot from the 3-point line now.
0-for-4.
Oh, so what? Instagram's not right?
Yeah. Well, I guess when he hits that first one, it'll be at a whopping 20%. So I guess that's better than zero. So
right, which is what he had last year.
Yeah. So good. You know, his free throw percentage is going up, though. It's up to 61% as we're recording this on Sunday night. So,
might say, it couldn't have gone any lower.
But I think hacking him, you know, again, you maybe don't want to do that in the entire first half, but if the game's getting away from you, that has to be something Wojo has to consider, even if you've got to put Cam Marotta in there to double him and just hack the crap out of him. When he gets the ball, just to use some fouls. I mean, that's what you got to do. But, you know, because as I've said before with Happ, when he gets the ball within 5 feet of the basket, the odds of him getting 2 points are probably about 80%. And when he get, but if you foul him, the odds of him getting 2 points are probably about 30%. So fouling him when he gets the ball deep in the post certainly has to be something you consider. And again, Phil, you kind of said it there. If someone else beats you in this game, then I think you live with it. Say, look, it just wasn't our day. Because you look at some of the other shooting percentages on this team, the numbers these other guys are putting up. Yeah, Happ is not getting a ton of help, and that's why they, again, on Sunday, sit at 3-5 and underdogs in their next two games against Penn State and Temple. My gut says Wisconsin's going to get at least one of those. So maybe they'll be 4-6 when Marquette comes to the coal hole on Saturday, but
I still think they come in leaking oil. I mean, this is if Marquette had won the Georgia game and hadn't had just kind of some of the disappointing looks about them, especially, you know, given what we've already talked about with Rousey, I would feel pretty confident going into that Wisconsin game. But I mean, with what's going on with the Marquette team, I don't. The coal hole is still an awful place to play.
Yeah, and the thing is, with Marquette's flaws right now, I can't again, as there are reasons I can talk myself into Marquette winning that game, but there are plenty of other reasons why I can talk myself into a disaster on in Madison on Saturday too. Because, you know, if you go there, the shots aren't falling and Ethan Happ is never called for any fouls, then he's just going to get his, and he might, you know, he might get as many points as he needs. They slow it down. They play a low possession game, which is probably what they want to do, because it's hard for Marcus Howard to hit 11 threes if he doesn't have that, have enough possessions.
Right. If we only get 11 possessions per half.
Right. So yeah, that's probably what Wisconsin's going to do, is slow this thing down and try to keep it in the 60s, I guess. But, you know, we'll see if Marquette's able to pick up the pace and try to make it a little bit higher scoring affair. And then maybe you can go into Madison and steal one. Then all of a sudden your non-conference resume looks much, much better. So, but, you know, I'm pessimistic that Marquette's flaws will be fixed this week, Phil. And I as much as I, you know, obviously doing this podcast, you know how my feelings are on that game. But if I'm trying to make a prediction in this one, it's hard for me to be optimistic that Marquette's going to get two wins this week, looking at these two teams they're playing. I'm hesitantly going to say they're going to beat Vermont on Tuesday. I don't think they're going to have an offensive performance as bad as they had against Georgia. Marcus Howard is going to get to hopefully play the whole game, and I think that makes all the difference. And hopefully they find a way to beat Vermont. But I can't get too cocky and say that they're going to win two this week and go and beat Wisconsin.
Well, see, I'm in a pessimistic dark place with the team as well. But I think the matchup against Vermont favors Marquette, especially if they can shoot well at all. And I think Wisconsin, quite frankly, I mean, like I said, they're going to be leaking oil coming into that game simply because they're going to have a long road trip. They've got to go on the road at Penn State. Then they got to go to Temple. The Temple game's on a Wednesday, so then they got to come back on presumably a Thursday and start preparing for Marquette. You know, if they've got two losses this week already going into that game, you know, what's their mentality going to be when they're sitting at 3-7 or whatever? And it's a rivalry game, so you kind of throw all the records out the window. But I give it at worst a 50-50 shot that Marquette beats Wisconsin. I actually am going to predict that Marquette wins both games, one of which they will win handily. I don't know which one, but one of them they will win handily.
You always are the optimistic one on this podcast. That's what I love about you. That's why we need you on this. We need you on this show. We need you on that wall, the optimistic wall, to tell people that everything is going to be okay.
I sure hope so, because otherwise, if we only win one or we lose both, oh boy, I'm going to go hard the other way. That all will be lost. It will be darkness forever. It's going to be real bad if we don't win, or at least are not competitive in both of these games.
You know, and you mentioned that, and there have been more than one post on our Marquette Twitter faithful, among our Marquette Twitter faithful, about the hot seat for Coach Wojo. And, you know, we defend him, but the thing is, we're also critical, but I think we're fair. And I'll say this, for those of you on the Fire Wojo train, you're not getting what you want this year. Wojo, like, even a disastrous ninth-place finish in the Big East, Wojo will not be leaving Marquette this year. He is going to get a chance to coach the 18-19 team, the team that opens up the new arena, the team he has been building towards that is, as things stand with the roster, so you hesitate to say that because there's always transfers, he's going to get a chance to coach this team that is loaded with experience, with his prized recruit, Joey Hauser, with an experienced Marcus Howard on the team, an experienced Sam Hauser, with Ed Morrow, with a senior in Matt Helt. That would be, hopefully Matt Helt is still there, because he would be the first guy to spend 4 years under Wojo at Marquette. That's one thing. That really
kind of telling.
Yeah, so it'd be great if Wojo could get some seniors through the program, freshmen to seniors. So Wojo's going to get a chance to coach next team. But I think I'll say this, you know, I defend Wojo as best I can. I kind of run out of, like, really good things to say as far as great direction for the program, doing really good things, making great progress. I'm kind of, you know, the team is, just because they're at a bit stale right now, but that's not to say they can't really turn things around. Because, again, you get two wins this week, and all of a sudden we're happy and optimistic again. But there are worthwhile concerns, but I think as far as, you know, again, the defense has struggled, and you're wondering if he can coach up the defense and can bring in players who can be complete players, both good offensively and good defensively. I think he does recruit some guys who are a bit one-dimensional, guys who are just shooters. But I'd say exercise some patience with Wojo. I know we're in year four here, heading towards year five, but there is progress. I know maybe not as much progress as some people want to see. I know maybe some people think we should be going to the Sweet 16 every year. That would be great, but it's also a pipe dream. Where are you kind of, Phil, as far as defending Wojo and the direction of the program as we kind of sit here right now?
Well, I think you're 100% correct. I mean, Wojo is not, barring some sort of like academic violation or just wholesale corruption, I don't see there's any scenario where Wojo is not the coach again next season. You know, and I see both sides. I do see the folks that are displeased with Wojo. I mean, expectations should be high. Quite frankly, if Marquette doesn't make the NCAA tournament this year, that is a disappointment and a step back from the program trend, right?
Right.
So granting that, and their deficiencies have been well documented, and Wojo's responsible for the roster construction. So when we say, well, this team just isn't constructed to play defense right now, well, I mean, who built the team? Yeah, who built the team? Whose fault is that? Now, having said all that, next year is the year that tells the tale, right? I mean, there would be, yes, the team will be somewhat young next season with really young talent. You know, Joey Hauser will be a freshman, and there'll be young talent. But the roster will be balanced with a lot of diverse skills and capabilities. It will be the best roster Wojo will have had at Marquette by far. So next season is what tells the tale, right?
I think we've kind of been talking that for a while, and I think this season's team kind of sets the tone for what the attitude will be for next year, right? Because if this team continues to trend down this year, next year is going to be the prove it year. Say, look, because you know Wojo is signed, I believe, through 21-22, so he's got quite a few seasons left on his deal, but you know. You're not going to let a guy coach into his last year of his contract. So once you get like 2 or 3 years away from the end of a deal, you know, it's time to either give him an extension or say this isn't working and let's go in another direction. So like the next 2 years, the 18-19 and the 19-20 seasons, those are the prove it years. And you mentioned some youth again next year, but I think most Marquette fans are kind of tired with youth being an excuse. You know, you got to get some guys through the program, and you got to have some experience. And like you mentioned, like, okay, well, who's constructed the roster? Well, Wojo has constructed the roster, and he's brought in some guys that, like Rousey and Kate and Reinhardt before him, who maybe they certainly shoot the ball well, but maybe they don't do necessarily everything you expect out of leaders. And some guys that he's recruited as freshmen have not seen all the way through to the program. Like the only guy left from his first that freshman class from a few years ago is Helt, right? Like there were what, 5 guys in that class when it started, and you know a lot of them are gone now. So youth can't be an excuse next year, even if there are some good young players on the team. So if this team continues to trend down, next year will be a prove it year. We'll say, look, let's decide if we're going in the right direction. And if next year is also disappointing, then I think the seat heats up and Marquette starts thinking about going another direction. But you know, if next year's great, then then you're talking contract extension, right? Cause I think once you get to the end of the 19-20 season, you're either talking, let's end this thing, or he will get an extension. It's going to be one or the other, because you're not going to let him go into one or two, because then it's tough to recruit when you know other teams know you've only got 1 or 2 years left on your deal and you don't have a new one. Like, you got to give a coach a new deal, say, look, I'm part of the future here, and that's where we're going. So, but if the team continues to trend up this year, say, like, you know, again, we're all down in the dumps now, but that's not to say it can't get a little better. And if the team trends up this year, then I think there will be a lot of buzz in the program, where and so next year wouldn't be so much a prove it year, it's a let's take a big step forward year and let's be a consistent top 25 team. And I think there would be a lot of buzz and excitement in the program, and that's kind of what I hope happens the rest of this year. So again, I know we're really a little down the way the team has played so far, and with the struggles in the defense, which have been well documented. But it's not to say when that this team can't get a little better as Elliott and Kane get more minutes and Froehling is added to the team. Who knows, maybe they surprise a little bit in Big East play, and maybe they surprise and get into the tournament, and who knows what happens from there. So, yes, the excuses are getting smaller as far as where the team's going, because there were plenty of legitimate excuses the first year. Like, he had an empty cupboard, okay? Like, you know, he didn't have much of a team his first year.
Yeah, there was a hole where the roster was.
Yeah, like, so he's had to, so his build has been much more different than Buzz Williams, who Buzz took over a team that was a Final Four contender in his first year. So, you know, it's almost, if you want to compare him to Buzz, you should start at Buzz's second year. And granted, Buzz did great things. Let's not kid ourselves. I know we're all bitter at the way, you know, that the fact that he left, but Buzz's second year is much closer to Wojo's first year as far as having to start from scratch and bring in a bunch of new players and try to build the program up again. And Wojo's done it a little bit differently, and it may be a little bit of a case of a grass is greener scenario, because, you know, when Buzz's teams were good, we loved him. Marquette fans fell in love with a certain type of player that Buzz brought in, those kind of junkyard dog defenders, the guys who were maybe really, really great athletes and were really tough and were really tough defensively, maybe not the most skilled offensive players all the time.
Right.
Because when Buzz's teams were losing, what was the big complaint?
They couldn't score buckets.
Couldn't shoot. Nobody could shoot on that team, right? Well, now you got guys who can shoot.
Right.
So, like, now you're on the other side of it. So now you've got a ton of guys who can shoot the ball, but then you lost that part that you fell in love with when with Buzz Williams' teams, of those guys who were really long and really athletic and played really fast and were really tough defensively. So you went on the other side, so now you miss that. So, again, maybe the grass is greener, but it's easy to say that because Marquette's teams have not been winning as much lately, but it's not to say they can't. And I am hopeful with what I've seen from guys like Elliott and Kane. They have some of that length and some of that, I don't know, maybe junkyard dog mentality maybe isn't totally accurate, but they have that kind of length and athleticism that they can be disruptive on the defensive end and maybe can bring some of that aspect that Marquette fans loved with Buzz Williams teams and add it to what they like about Wojo's teams, that they have guys that can shoot and guys who can make a lot of threes and can be really tough down the stretch if you're trying to come back in a game. Because if you're hitting a bunch of threes while the other team's hitting free throws, there's always a shot that Marquette can come back and win. So,
right. Well,
that's kind of where I am with this team.
Well, and you know, if Marquette can just play competent defense down the road, I mean, the offense is good enough, right? We'll see. And the other side of the coin around the Wojo angst is, okay, even if the Fire Wojo crowd got their way this year, we're looking at a total reset again, right? I mean, even if you fire Wojo, admittedly, after next season, if the next season's not good or is a disaster or whatever it is that causes you to want to get rid of Wojo, you know, who knows what happens to players? Do they leave? We're in the market, you know, we're in the market for another up-and-coming assistant coach, right? I mean, you're not going to necessarily, you know, love Marquette, but you're not going to get an established head coach with a sterling reputation that's going to come say, you know, yeah, I'm going to go take that Marquette job.
Yeah, you're not going to get Billy Donovan to leave the Thunder or anything right. like that. Right.
Right. You're not going to get, what's his name, to leave Wichita State.
Marshall.
You're not going to get Greg Marshall to leave Wichita State to come to Marquette, right? So if you hit the reset on the Wojo era, you darn well better be ready to be in the wilderness a little bit longer, right? Because you're taking a gamble that there's someone better than Wojo that you can grab. So,
and yeah, and who knows? Maybe there is, but I'm not ready to explore that yet.
Yeah, I'm not ready to take that chance.
I like. I want to see how we can do again. Hopefully, again, I'm a little bit again. We don't know exactly what Cheatham's situation was, but I would like to see some really good players stay through the program from freshman through their senior year and see what happens. And namely, Marcus Howard and Sam Hauser. I want to get those guys through the program and the guys that they have with them, the teams they have around them, with Joey Hauser coming up, with Froehling's going to be with them for a couple of years, or they're going to get those two guys with Ed Morrow for a couple of years. And thing is, look at how experienced Marquette's teams are going to be the next 2 years. Granted, there will be some young talent on next year's team, but there will be a ton of guys with experience, a lot of juniors next year, and then the year after that, it's going to be a ton of seniors. And so, like, if the program isn't where you want it after that 19-20 season, I could say, look, that's probably as good as it's going to get with Wojo. And then you can maybe make some decisions and see what the direction of the program. But I want to see, again, hopefully there aren't, knock on wood, too many more transfers and guys leaving the program or whatever. Because if you can get this core with Howard, Hauser, both Hausers, and you know, early returns are good on Elliott and Kane, but you know, I'm not going to retire their numbers just yet. Let's just see how this core can get through the next couple years. Again, if you're a Fire Wojo guy, prepare for disappointment this year. You're not going to get your wish. I can almost guarantee you, you're not going to get your wish this year.
Yeah, I agree. It ain't happening.
Next year is the year where it's going to be at, like, worst case for Wojo. Next year is a prove it year, and I think he will have the horses to prove it next year. Although I would like to see a point guard and distributor added to next year's team before I get really optimistic, but we'll see how the roster shakes out between now and then. But I guess that's kind of where I am on Wojo. Again, I'm running, like, maybe I'm kind of in a tough spot as far as defending him and saying there are so many good things about the program and this is why you should be excited. I know people don't like to be told be patient, but I'm saying be a little more patient. I know you want to see this team go deep in the tournament. I know you want Big East titles. This team is not quite there yet. There's some more pieces that need to be added. A couple of them are on the way, including Froehling coming up next week. We can break down his debut next week a little bit, and we'll see what the team looks like next year with the younger Hauser joining the fun. Hopefully this core stays together and there's not any more transfers, because I kind of like a lot of the pieces that the team has, and we'll just kind of see where they go from there. So I guess that's kind of my piece on Wojo, is if you're disappointed, I understand why, and I don't have a whole lot of reasons to tell you that things are going to be great from here on out, but I'm saying, let's ride it out and see what this core can do. And hey, let's get a win against Vermont and Wisconsin, and then we'll, you know, maybe talk an extension next week.
Right. Whoa, easy there on the extension talk. But yeah, no, I you're absolutely right. I mean, you got to look at it from the perspective, and we're kind of ping-ponging emotionally through this, right? I mean, coming off of prior to the Hanif transfer and kind of the near disaster against Eastern Illinois, you know, if we had potted that Sunday night coming off the Maui Invitational, we would have been pretty, you know, relatively happy with where we are. But then you get Eastern Illinois, Hanif leaves, kind of the drama seemingly throughout what should have been a winnable game with Georgia, and now we're kind of on our back foot going, what is going on? So I think Vermont and Wisconsin, you know, those are both winnable games. Let's see, these two games should be kind of prove it's for Wojo's, right? I mean, I don't think either team is a outclassing Marquette or has some sort of talent disparity. So this is going to be, you know, coach against coach, whose players execute their plan better. And I think this will be a little bit of a mini referendum on what Wojo does with adversity and how he kind of builds it. But that's my shtick. But I'm cautiously optimistic that these next two games that Wojo will get the team clicking a little bit and try and build some momentum for the Big East season coming up.
I hope your optimism proves correct.
It hasn't always. I'm not going to lie.
It hasn't always, but you know, I hope you're right this week, but I'm on the record with a 1-1 week. I think they'll figure something out against Vermont, and I'm just not ready to predict going to Madison and getting a win. You're on the record with two wins, Phil?
Yes, that is correct. Two wins.
All right. So let's hope for two wins this week for Marquette, and then we can be very happy and talk about everything that's right with the Marquette program next week, as Harry Froehling will be eligible to join the team for those next two bye games. And hey, one more thing I'll say for everyone. Every Marquette fan of Milwaukee. This is kind of a thing I've tried to get started, hasn't quite got going. Don't wear red this week.
No red.
No red for anyone, including Owen.
Yeah, hashtag no red for Owen.
Again, I'm kind of copying the Ohio State-Michigan thing where Ohio State X's out every M they see everywhere. That's kind of my thing. I don't wear any red the week of the Wisconsin game. Wear your blue, wear your gold, and hopefully, and for those of you going to the game, wear that blue and gold proudly, and hopefully you can cheer on a win against the hated Badgers in Madison. As always, we thank you for listening to Scrambled Eggs. Please hit us up on Twitter with your comments, your thoughts, and we talked about a lot today, kind of a long podcast, but I hope you enjoyed it. Hit me up. I'm Joe McCann 3. Phil is MOOOF 23. You can hit up Crack Sidewalks as the team handle. You can leave your comments on cracksidewalks.com. Please rate us and review us on iTunes. Love those 5-star ratings. Really appreciate your feedback on there. And of course, there is a Scrambled Eggs Facebook page as well. You can check us out there. We post the podcast on there. Phil, any final thoughts before we get out of here?
Well, I hope this has been a good therapy session for everyone. And everyone enjoys the hell out of Badger Hate Week because it is one of the greatest times of the year.
Yeah, it's the guys who do especially great with it. Of course, Anonymous Eagle is hilarious. Follow their content all week. Mub Nation, Marquette Nation on Twitter has been pretty funny as well. They've started, they're not going to use any W's in any of their tweets this week. That's pretty funny. So have some fun with Badger Hate Week on Twitter. Love your Bo Ryan memes.
Hashtag references.
Yeah, any references to AutoZone, if you know what I'm talking about there, have some fun with that. And I guess any funny Frank Kaminsky memes that are out there, there are certainly a few of those. So have fun with those. Have fun with Badger Hate Week. Be tasteful, but also be jerks. It's totally fine. It's Badger Hate Week. Enjoy the hate. Seashells and balloons, everyone.